This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Singapore has been hailed as one of the fintech or financial technology startup hotspots in the world. According to data from UOB, Singapore is home to 43% of fintech companies in Southeast Asia. That's about 750-plus organizations. Malaysia, in comparison, has slightly under 200 companies in operations. We recently caught up with Sopnendu Mohanty, the Chief Fintech Officer at the Monetary Authority of Singapore, or MAS, the central bank. Thank you for making time for us. When you took the job at MAS about 4 years ago, what were the KPIs given to you?
Thanks for having me. In fact, there was no such KPI. In fact, the only KPI I can think was that the managing director of MAS gave a speech at the law academy, and he sends this speech to me and says, Sops, here goes what you need to do. And it was quite broad in that sense that we got to create an opportunity for the sector to take advantage of the fintech revolution. And in that process, we got to put the right policies in place so that this partnership between the innovators coming through fintech ecosystem can truly transform the financial sector, which will be ready for the future digital economy. So that was the very general agenda out there. But in a way, if I look back, it actually is a great way to start, because what we don't know, we don't know. And we almost discovered our own KPI over the 4 years, and we redefined what is our role is every year.
So what would you say now is your KPI?
Here are three things I would like to abstract. Is have the financial institution truly transform themselves by adopting new technology? What is the adoption rate of the new technology by the FIs will be one KPI I would like to measure myself. The second KPI would be how many of the fintechs we have succeeded in anchoring them in the ecosystem, and they're successful in building partnership with the FI, and they're also growing. And the third one, I would say, how much of the existing talent pool, which was perhaps not ready for the digital economy, have now retrained, reskilled, and repurposed themselves to be able to handle the new age, a new digital economy demand in the financial sector.
So let's talk about the financial institutions. When I look at your research reports that are produced by the analysts about, say, DBS, UOB, and OCBC, and I don't find that the technology narrative, that digital transformation narrative coming into the picture, it's still about the bigger economic picture that affects DBS and so forth. How satisfied are you with the progress of change among local financial institutions in Singapore?
When I started my job in 2015, we were deeply researching what really stops this transformation. There are a few things which we thought was the undiscussable barrier of adoption of new technology. One was the core architecture of these banks itself. They were legacy systems. They are not designed to connect to the new fintechs. So how do we change that? That was the first thing we got to fix. So what we got ourselves engaged was in the process of writing a collaborative document on how to build APIs. Because APIs is the way banks will connect to the fintechs. That's the way, new way of partnering. The second policy, which we thought was the challenge for banks to adopt new technology, was the use of cloud. So we put together a cloud policy to allow banks to adopt more cloud so that, you know, that whole partnership becomes more efficient. And the third piece, we looked at what are the public infrastructure we must build which can take away some of the constraint banks are having to be part of this digital journey. Examples: can we make our payment system much more robust, make it much more easier? So we build public infrastructure called PayNow, SGQR, single QR, as a public good, which allows banks to take advantage of making payment transformation much more remarkable and easier. We thought of eKYC. Can we put a public utility for eKYC so banks' onboarding of customer becomes delightful? In Singapore today, almost every bank can onboard customers in 5 minutes, a full account, straight from our digital infrastructure. So that's the third piece which we worked on. When you bring all the three together, our local banks have taken a huge advantage of these platforms. And they have today, I mean, I would say they can be compared to the best digital banks around the world in terms of adoption of technology, use of technology, upgrading their talent, and ability to use public infrastructure efficiently.
There is also one more barrier I feel about banks in Singapore. I think, for example, DBS has won the Best Digital Bank Award, so I can see there's real progress there. On the other hand, however, these are three large banks and they are major employers. And you know, with digital, some people are going to lose their jobs. And I wonder whether, you know, that's going to be a barrier for these banks to innovate faster. Your thoughts on this?
I would argue, simplistic math, intuitively, you believe that because of digitization, you will create a job loss, which is quite logical in that sense. But one thing good about the digital transformation, especially digital economy, it has opened up new areas of opportunities, which didn't exist earlier. So it expanded the product suite. So banks, what they used to offer earlier, let's say some product, now they're offering new product because they're taking advantage of the digital economy. So there's an expansion of product suite, expansion of businesses, expansion of new way of delivering business. So this new way of delivering business is creating new kind of jobs. You didn't have a data analytics team, they have new jobs. You didn't have a digital transformation team, they have new jobs. You don't have API partners team. There's a complete new set of jobs. How to build partnership with different third party to build collaborative platforms. So in a way, we have shifted from old economy to the new economy. We have shifted from old business processes to business processes. On a net sum basis, I think largely we are squared off. So what went out got replaced with new models, new partnership, new kind of jobs, new skill set. Yes, what you will see a bit of job loss because people are skilling themselves. In that process, you will see an interim negative, but in the long run, it will be a zero-sum game, or maybe better.
Banks cannot figure out how to work with fintechs. At the same time, fintechs probably do not know how to work with banks unless the owners have worked in a bank before. How do you bridge that?
This is something we don't discuss. I mean, low fintech will admit that they are not being smart enough to go and work with the bank because banks are regulated. They are operating under certain principles of regulatory framework, and it is not a fun to work with a regulated entity. So fintech do have a struggle to understand how bank operate. I'm not justifying what banks in terms of the digital experience, that's the right thing to do, but there's a need for them to work in a certain way. Similarly, the fintech themselves, banks themselves are struggling because their ability to trust, their ability to understand a fintech's value proposition is quite limited. And there are many claiming to solve a certain problem. And there's a problem of many. And they're struggling to pick up which one is a good one, which one is what they're going to pick. So we have this match problem. And I do not buy the argument that we have a money problem today. There are plenty of investors' capital for fintechs to tap in. Whether they're from Malaysia or they're from Cambodia or they're from Vietnam, there are plenty of money. So money is not the issue. The issue is, are there opportunities for them to connect and collaborate? And to solve that, we talked about this platform called API Exchange, which allows a fintech to describe themselves, put their product on the platform, get banks to test the product online, on the cloud, and same time, banks can publish their data set and they can experiment together on the platform at a fraction of a cost in a much more simpler way before they finalize which fintech to work for. We are solving in this process the first stage of any innovation, which is discover, design, and deploy the proof of concept, a pilot of what you want to use as a basis for your transformation. If you can solve that problem, you are now opening up a door. And to open the door, you need to check certain things before you get in the house. But once you get into the house, you have access to everything. And that's a significant jump in where fintechs engage the bank.
So how many companies are right now listed on this exchange?
Well, the trial platform, we got more than 100 plus fintechs and there are 60 plus banks who participate in the trial. The production launch of the platform went out last month. We are in the process of onboarding in a more formal way through contracts to the banks and fintech. We hope by middle of November, we should be able to get 100 banks and thousands of fintechs to start partnering. And I must say, there is no other way for fintechs and the bank to really collaborate and transform unless they have an access to a platform like this. It is just impossible.
Could you give us an idea of the geography, like where do these banks come from and where do these fintechs?
We have started with ASEAN Bankers Association, and I did say in the big stage, one thing ASEAN Bankers or ASEAN Association have not telling the big story. This is a remarkable platform they've done. Nowhere in the world it has been crafted. The UK put a GIF in, it's a process. Singapore put a sandbox, it's a process, something. But this is real platform, real system. You are delivering a collaboration on a real platform and making things easier. Now ASEAN Bankers Association members are coming into the platform. India has come in. We're looking Middle East, we're looking Africa. We hope in 2 years' time, this is the platform, global platform, where every jurisdiction's participants are participating, collaborating, testing, and it is a non-profit platform. It has got no competitive advantage. It is a collaboration effort from various ecosystem, thanks to very good donors who are helping to keep the platform.
How do you persuade banks who may be reluctant to share their data sets? There's and also fintech companies.
It's a good point. It's a test data set. It's not a production data set. Either you collaborate or you lose out. And I think banks will be smart enough to understand it will dramatically reduce their opportunity cost, the missing opportunity cost. Today, you ask a CIO, he or she struggles the idea of partnering. It can reduce the cost, it can reduce the discovery, it can reduce all the fintechs they don't want to engage with. Similarly, the fintechs have to step up their engagement. They have to be more robust. They have to bring more transparency to the product. And we talked about the S&P rating as a part of the future, and by first quarter next year, that will just jump the whole profile to next level. Fintechs will have some rating to aspire to. So it brings transparency, ease of partnership, collaboration into a production public space. Think like a public good for collaboration. We are experimenting a model in partnership with Deloitte and S&P, and that model, experimental model, will come by first quarter. We don't know whether that will be used as a rating, but we are looking at a score which will define a kind of benchmark how good the fintechs are. But again, this is not a rating. It is a kind of number to look at.
So it's a product rating as opposed to a financial rating.
Yes.
We have been speaking with Sopnendu Mohanty, the Chief Fintech Officer of Monetary Authorities of Singapore, the Central Bank. Later, we're going to discuss what the future will look like for banking.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
There are some restrictions in investing in a startup for banks. Do you foresee that has to change?
For the banks to invest on fintech, yes, there are certain restrictions, what you call as non-core investments. And I think the trend is shifting. We can see a lot of banks are setting up their venture investment arm. And they're investing on technology which they're going to consume. My sense is banks' ability to consume fintech and the same time ability to invest on fintech will start shifting the gear in a big time as the bank get comfortable the idea of fintechs being also a part of which they consume. My optimism will say banks will going to open up more capital to invest in fintechs than what we see today.
So in 5 years' time?
Much earlier. Banks will look to have tech competitive advantage by investing into fintechs. I think the platform economy we spoke about, ultimately the game is who access the platform, who has access to the different platform economy. And it's all about, are you present in the platform? And banks will take significant equity into these platforms as long as it is part of the financial service remit.
MAS has issued the framework for digital banks. What do you hope to see coming out from having this framework?
So I think the digital bank license is an evolving thought. We looked at how the world is shaping up. There's a need to explore or reimagine the financial sector in terms of in digital banking construct. If you examine carefully our policy intent, it is designed to facilitate branchless banking. In a sense, that's what it essentially means. And perhaps from a regulatory perspective, not much difference, except if you are doing a full banking, you still have to put the same amount of money as a existing bank license. But what it allows, a construct, what I call as a presenceless banking. It allows an opportunity for remote banking. It allows an opportunity to introduce more digital services. And perhaps this is something we'll observe carefully and see how we can fine-tune as we go forward.
I see this framework as being quite pivotal in your industry. So what's your prediction on how the banking industry will look like by, say, 2030 in Singapore?
A lot of banks already has pivoted without the license to digital construct already. They are moving to more platform-driven services. There are more e-services. They're onboarding customers remotely. I think progressively the ATM footprint will decrease because cash will be lesser. You will see less of branch banking. So in that natural process, and as I spoke about the fintechs coming in, partnering with the banks, the use of cloud, more public infrastructure, the abilities to go and to give a true digital services end-to-end will increase. Whether they're taking the new licenses or their existing licenses, all will end up in the same boat.
So which brings me to this point then. So the framework came out after when some players are already, you know, chipping off some market share from banks. So how do you ensure regulations keep pace with innovation?
I think we should not look at whether they're taking market share. I think the way we should look at is, again, coming back to the core values, core principles. Are we serving a customer need in the way they expect it to be delivered? Are we delivering the products which is in the need of the hour? Are you developing wealth product which is more widely available in terms of distribution, in terms of more customized to the need? Are you delivering pension product which is more driven around your real needs? So there is a whole demand which is driving this shift. And if banks are able to react to the new demand and they need a license regime to support that, I think that's a good thing.
Speaking to a fintech player, they say there are cases where Monetary Authorities of Singapore, MAS, has approved licenses for companies that were not approved by Malaysia's central bank. It sounds like MAS may be taking either this approach of let 1,000 flowers bloom and let's see what gems come out of it, as long as they meet some minimum standards, or rather than over-engineer outcomes. So what's your response to that, that your standards may be lower?
I personally don't know which companies we have licensed, but I think there is we have certain guidelines to comply to, and there is no exception made for fintech per se. What we have done, we have now come with a new regulation around payment service bill, which has modularized the whole payment licensing, and that bill will be effective from November. And at that point of time, a lot of fintech companies will, especially payment space, will get regulated. And today, we have certain things we don't compromise in terms of standards, AML, CFT,
prudential regulations.
They are non-negotiable. But I think there's a definition issue in that whole what gets approved. What is fintech? I think there's a big misunderstanding. People think fintechs are only in business of providing financial services directly in a B2C construct, which I think many regulators are now understanding better. Fintechs are also in business of providing technology to the regulated institution who are servicing customer. I think because of the gray definition, there is this misunderstanding that fintechs in Singapore are operating in a 1,000-flower mode, because 80% of our portfolio are B2B fintech. And the one that licensed are licensed on existing regime. We have not made a single fine-tuning to allow more to be licensed easily. It is the existing regulation. Nothing has changed last 4 years. The only big change we are building is the payment service bill.
You know, by 2030, could you see like retailers like Starbucks, Facebook even getting a banking license?
The question I think they should ask themselves, will they need a banking license? Will they need to go for a license? Because many a time, while it looks quite exciting, because they may not be interested to have a bank license. They may be just interested in providing the engine behind a regulated bank to serve the customer. So my prediction is that there could be few of them looking for a bank license, but most of them will be in the business of helping a regulated entity to do banking.
This point here, non-traditional players like Facebook, they're going to offer their own cryptocurrency.
Yes.
So Facebook's Libra.
Yes.
Your position on this?
I think they would, if they're operating in Singapore, they will be licensed by the new payment service bill. That's as simple as that. So if they're doing a financial activity which we regulate, they will be regulated. I think that's something given. Now, as the part of regulation, they have to comply to certain expectation of the regulatory standard, whether that their existing product model matches or they need to step up to match it is something to be watched out for. But my last discussion with the Facebook team, I think they are looking at to comply with every required regulation of the market they operate for the payment services.
So given that Singapore market is actually quite small, so your fintechs will probably want to expand into Indonesia and perhaps Malaysia. So what has been the progress in working with other ASEAN regulators, for example, to establish mutual agreements and maybe to harmonize standards?
Again, I would redefine what is fintech. I think every time such question comes, I think people assume this fintech company are doing regulatory services. As I said, Singapore is the home to large B2B fintech. They're not necessary. They don't need to be regulated. They're like digitizing your bank services. They're like a tech company, but they're focused on financial services. They're tech fin. So because of the large dominant B2B nature of Singapore's fintech, they will operate with many market as a natural tech provider. If there are fintech which are offering licensed activity, of course, they have to work with the fellow regulators and ensure that they comply to the respective jurisdiction regulation. But we are building a lot of consensus in our own collaboration with other regulators through our own partnership, cooperation agreement. We have partnership, MOU, in terms of fintech cooperation with every ASEAN regulators. And that allows us a dialogue opportunity to find common balances as we expand.
So those conversations are ongoing?
Yes, it's always there. It's a constant.
Thank you for your time. We just spoke with Sopnendu Mohanty, Chief Fintech Officer at the Monetary Authority of Singapore, or MAS. I'm Noelle Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.